there's this story you might know. It's about an apple and a garden and a woman named Eve. There's a snake, Adam's there too. I couldn't tell you when I actually literally read this story, but I also can't remember a time when I didn't know it. And I haven't been able to get it out of my head. And preparing for today and diving into this new worship series on feeling good, on desire and pleasure and its role in our lives. The version that you may know, whether you grew up Christian or just in this country, is that when Adam and Eve, is the one where Adam and Eve are told by God that they can eat any fruit of any tree in the whole garden except for the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And if they do, they will die. As this version of the story goes, Eve is seduced by the serpent, disobeys God, eats the fruit from this forbidden tree, shares it with Adam, and then they are reprimanded by God and cast out of the garden. I'm paraphrasing. Eve is often blamed, right, in this version, as if her desire, the way she longed to taste the ripened red fruit off of the tree, as if her desire was so powerful that it led to the fall of humanity. Eve and desire become responsible for the fall of humanity, which is really intense. And a message that has appeared and reappeared and reappeared and reappeared some more in literature and popular culture and art for a long, long time. And even if you think you haven't agreed to take this story into your life, it has likely seeped in anyway. Because most theology for thousands of years, especially if it was written down and reproduced, was written by and for men with a patriarchal culture and context. So for generations, layers and layers of interpretation named desire and women as something that needed to be controlled because it was so dangerous, so powerful. Until things began to change, slowly, painstakingly, until the voices of women and feminists not that long ago began to make some noise, saying that this pervasive interpretation of Eve and the apple and the serpent actually reveals more about the values and the context of the theologian and less about some enduring truth. The first time I heard a liberating interpretation of this story, I was in seminary. From friends and scholars, I heard reclaimed retellings, much like this one I stumbled upon recently from Trelawney Grenfell Muir, who is responding to her 7-year-old daughter's question about Adam and Eve. But one day, she writes, Eve was sitting under the tree when another face of the god, the snake, the serpent of earth wisdom, came and spoke to her. And she told Eve, "Did Mother God tell you that if you eat this fruit, you will die? She was trying to protect you, but that's not true. If you eat this fruit, you will become much more wise and be able to choose whether to do right or wrong. You will become wild and free, and you will experience difficulty and pain, but you will be able to learn and to grow, become adults, make love, have children, and learn from your mistakes how to become much more powerful. Once you eat it, you can never go back to being sheltered children, though. You will understand this life is full of choices, and those choices have consequences. And only by experiencing those consequences can we learn and grow." The end. That's a different version. Yes. And in this line of interpretation, Eve is celebrated as the bringer of knowledge, of consciousness. Because she said yes to her desire for the fruit, all textures and layers of life were revealed. the bitterness and the sour, the pain and the struggle, yes, but also the sweet and the savory, the deliciously pleasurable and satisfying. In this retelling of a pervasive cultural story, it's because of Eve's courageous choice that humans can wake up, which is really waking up to both pleasure and pain. But we must not forget about pleasure. And this isn't really as much about trying to reclaim a biblical text as it is about the journey of reclaiming desire and pleasure as good. And with almost 2,000 years of loud shaming voices, shaming desire, you can imagine that when writer and scholar Audre Lorde delivered a paper at Mount Holyoke College in the summer of 1978 called Uses of the Erotic as Power, she disrupted some old stories. Self-described Black lesbian feminist mother warrior poet, Audre Lorde is in a long lineage of courageous Black women speaking a difficult truth for the sake of freedom. Not just their own freedom, but the freedom for all. Lorde names the erotic as being a source of power that has been intentionally distorted and suppressed for the purpose of preventing real change. The kind of real change that moves us, propels us toward collective liberation, toward a place and a time where all life, all bodies are free. Lorde describes how the word erotic stems from the Greek word eros, the personification of love in all its aspects, personifying creative power and harmony. Another important way in which the erotic connection functions, she writes, is the open and fearless underlining of my capacity for joy, in the way my body stretches and opens to music, hearkening to its deepest rhythms. So every level upon which I sense also opens to the erotically satisfying experience, whether it's dancing, building a bookcase, writing a poem, or examining an idea. Like yesterday, in the early evening, in the midst of a very packed weekend with a lot of moving pieces and demands, in the midst of trying to decide if and how I wanted to share Audre Lorde's words with you this morning, my partner Andy said, "Let's go for a walk." It was just so particularly beautiful this weekend, I felt. The temperature, the fact that every moment seemed to reveal this pop of color. But I felt busy and struggled to be with this beauty of the season, dripping everywhere. "Did you know I like little walks?" Andy asked as we moved slowly out the door, just 15 or 20 minutes around a few blocks. And it began to feel like an attempt at practicing all of what we're naming this morning. In the midst of it all, taking a few moments to walk around the block, to say yes to the life longing to be seen and recognized all around me and us. There were these deep purple cone-like flowers, but purple isn't even it, as if I don't even have the word for the color of the flower. Then there were the teeny yellow ones just beside. These insane shades of tulips, bright blue. And then, of course, there were the even smaller flowers that had white stripes of different thicknesses down the center. This sense of abundance everywhere. Aliveness, rebirth, desire, patiently waiting for us to acknowledge it for a moment. Showing itself right now around us just for a moment that will soon lead to something different. The erotic functions for me in several ways, writes Lord. And the first is in providing the power which comes from sharing deeply any pursuit with another person. The sharing of joy, whether physical, emotional, psychic, or intellectual, it forms a bridge, she says, that shares, which can be the basis for understanding much of what is not shared between them and lessens the threat of their difference. Inspired, changed, and energized by Audre Lorde, Adrienne Marie Brown's new book, Pleasure Activism, Essays and Conversations on the Possibilities of Making Social Justice Work More Gratifying, just debuted at number 6 on the New York Times bestseller list, which I felt surprised by given the title, pleasantly surprised. And in this book, she and so many others observe that pleasure is a natural, safe, and liberated part of life. And that this moment is calling us to shift our focus from where we are, from what we are negatively reacting to what we long for and what we love. That collective liberation doesn't come through collective suffering, but rather when we work and live now our collective pleasure. It's about that source of power that Audre Lorde named, a source of power that has been for so long locked up, not just for women or women-identified people, but for all. Locked up through other self-denying stories, like the way Western philosophy has split the mind from the body, elevating the mind. Because experiencing pleasure is about our bodies. And every single body is invited. That includes your body. We don't experience feeling good up here. We experience feeling good in our bodies here. Your body with its exact shape, its exact level of ability, with its exact amount of scars and spots and hair and folds, what makes your body feel good matters. Especially if some part of your identity or experience has told you that your body and what you desire doesn't matter or belong to you. And each of us, of course, has a different relationship to our body. Yet no matter the stories your body carries, still, this life force of Eros, the flow, the river that moves through you, is your guide. What offers you that deep sense of satisfaction in this life is your compass. What unleashes the current of longing matters, but not only for you. It matters to all of us and all of life that you listen to your longing. Our inherent interdependence makes it so. I think a result of sourcing power, Brown writes, in our longing and pleasure is abundant justice. That we can stop competing with each other, that we can instead generate power from the overlapping space of desire and aliveness, tapping into an abundance that has enough attention, liberation, and justice for all to have plenty. Valuing what makes us feel good is reclaiming a disconnected part of ourselves. It's about realigning our minds with our bodies and our hearts and our spirits and surrendering into the rush of abundant life that pours forth when we do, just waiting to be unleashed. It's about reclaiming consensual and mutually pleasurable sex, eating, cooking, fashion, humor, music, so many different kinds of art, and so much more. It's about reclaiming a relationship to our bodies, tuning into what satisfies you, what nourishes you, what brings you joy, and paying attention to it. And this isn't about excess. As Brown really clearly names, it's not even about indulgence. It's about, quote, learning what it means to be satisfiable, learning how to sense when something is good for you, and to be able to feel what is enough. And we do this, we practice this, by saying yes to what makes us feel good when it arrives. Which is not an invitation to avoid or deny pain. That's still there, and it always will be. It's part of the whole, too. It's rather an invitation to surrender into the pleasure when it is present. When you take a bite of something, warm and delicious, cooked for you by someone who makes you laugh, when you share sticky fruit with another who you love, relationships of love and sex based in trust and honest communication, the sound of the crunching forest underneath your feet, the smudge of paint. Throughout the whole month, we'll be exploring some of the many ways we experience feeling good. How we experience the abundant power of aliveness through music, our bodies, humor. And each Monday, we'll be sending you an email with a few recipes and practices, movements, movies, music, anything that brings you joy, pleasure, happiness into your life and the lives of those around you. The staff is kicking things off this week. Teaser. Tomorrow's email might include a playlist of songs that we've all been dancing and moving to recently. Audre Lorde puts it like this. We have been raised to fear the yes within ourselves. We have been raised to fear the yes within ourselves, our deepest cravings. But when we surrender into the yes within ourselves, we are a little bit closer to freedom. A freedom from old stories designed to forge disconnection and oppression to keep things the same. When we surrender into the yes within ourselves, we are a little bit closer to freedom. Freedom to love and be loved in new and generative ways. Freedom to sing and to move, to be in the fullness of our bodies just as they are, and this life just as it is. Amen. May it be so.